Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Lance Becker from the Northwell Health System. He is the chair of emergency medicine there, and I have had the privilege to speak to him already about the research he's been doing. It is so progressive. It is new, and I know he's going to be very humble about the infancy that it's in, but I still think it's really important that he gets his message across to us. I think it's a really huge message of hope. And I am so just elated that there is someone like Dr. Becker doing this kind of research and that he is willing to talk to us on the podcast today. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Becker.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Marcy.
So before we get started on the research you're doing, which is very specific to mitochondrial health, let's talk about your background and how you kind of got into this type of research, got interested in doing it, you know, because you are in emergency medicine.
So I've had a pretty crazy pathway. Okay. And not direct at all. There were people who thought I was just like veering all over the place. But I, you know, I started as an emergency physician, and the disease that I focused on was cardiac arrest, which kills a lot of people in this country. And I did a lot of research on things like CPR and defibrillators and then cooling and then monitoring and all kinds of ways to treat cardiac arrest. But while I did that, I started thinking about cells. And I started to think about how cells were the final victim of a cardiac arrest, you could say, you know, that your cells would end up being injured or even dying after cardiac arrest, particularly your brain cells. And as I got into that research, I started a long time ago at the University of Chicago. And what I started to see right away is that there were these arrows that were pointing me to the mitochondria. And the arrows were saying, oh, you need to, if you want to fix somebody who's had a cardiac arrest and get more people to survive, you got to learn more about the mitochondria. And I started learning more and more about mitochondria, because what it turned out is that after a cardiac arrest, and for the people who don't know, a cardiac arrest is when there's no blood flow at all. Like your heart stops beating in an organized way. There's no blood going to your brain. There's no blood going to your heart. There's no blood going to any of your other organs. So your tissues don't have oxygen because that's what's being pumped around in your blood. So it's like an oxygen emergency. And it's an oxygen emergency throughout the whole body when you have a cardiac arrest. And what we started to learn is all of these messages were starting to flash up that said, if you have an oxygen emergency, the problem ultimately is in the mitochondria, because the mitochondria is the little organelle that processes all of most of our oxygen for our whole body. So what happened is, as I was doing my research, more and more and more little signposts were sticking up, and they were saying, you have to learn about mitochondrial dysfunction. There's something that's going wrong with the mitochondria. The mitochondria are starting to misbehave. The mitochondria are starting to do signaling. The mitochondria are starting to have a behavior that they didn't have. And I got interested in mitochondria. And that's what really led this field to sort of start to open up, with that lots of people all around the world began to see that mitochondrial dysfunction, and I almost use that with quotes, it's like mitochondrial stuff was ultimately why people die after a cardiac arrest. And now we've learned that mitochondrial stuff is really important in all kinds of diseases that have to do with oxygen, have to do with aging, and have to do with cancer. And they have to do with the primary mitochondrial diseases too. So that's really what got me into mitochondrial diseases.
Wow. I wish I could clone you. I feel like there's not that many people out there that have,
you know, studied anything related to cardiac health and kind of dovetailed into focusing on mitochondrial health. And I wish there were more people like you, but I'm so glad that you are you and that you've kind of taken your research and gone in some very progressive ways. And so today you are here to talk to our audience about mitochondrial transplantation. And this is such a new idea. It's something that, I mean, I was diagnosed almost 20 years ago, and there was, you know, no talk of it then. And I've been praying for, you know, some type of news in this regard. So tell us where you're at with everything. Give us kind of like a 101 on your research.
Well, so I think, you know, the like quick story, and then if people want to learn more, they can like read more. But the quick story is that, so there were all these like, going back 20, 30 years ago, there were like all of these sort of signposts that were saying we needed to learn more about mitochondria and mitochondrial dysfunction if we wanted to fix mitochondrial diseases like you're talking about, Marcy, or if we want to talk about we want to help people with cardiac arrest or people with aging or people with cancer, many, many other diseases. There were all of these indicators, but for the most part, the way we approached it 20 years ago is we kind of thought, well, we need to figure out maybe a like a chemical pathway. And I'm sure you heard about chemical pathways that could be kind of important. And those are not unimportant, but what kind of blew up about 4 or 5 years ago was the idea that even more fulfilling than a chemical pathway, maybe we could just replace a new mitochondria. Wow. That was just like a whole brain, like just my whole brain had to turn upside down and backwards when I started reading some papers about that. And I didn't discover it. There were other people who started talking about it. And what they figured out is that in Mother Nature, and I always try to study Mother Nature because Mother Nature typically is working really hard for all of us, you know. Mother Nature swaps mitochondria around from one cell to the other. And that was unknown when I learned biology. Like nobody, if I had asked my professors, oh, what about these mitochondria that go from one cell to another? They just would have said, you were out drinking last night. That doesn't happen. Okay. But what we figured out is they do, that these mitochondria are pretty amazing little organelles. And that's not so surprising because mitochondria evolved, we think, like where they came from originally. And remember, they're like, they make up us, okay? But they probably were a bacteria 2.5 billion years ago or something like that that got incorporated into another cell. And that's what created the kind of cells that make up our bodies. So we're like kind of half symbiote, okay, with the mitochondria being the little bacterial brethren that make up all of our cells. And they don't stay in one place. They don't even stay in one cell all the time. And if now we see these wonderful videos, you've probably seen some of them. If you look at a mitochondria, they're like wiggling around. They're like little worms going through the cell. And sometimes they go out of the cell, and sometimes they even go into another cell. And that is not an accident. And I do think the first people that like identified it, they probably thought, oh, it's just like it's an accident. Well, again, to the scientists out there, have a little respect for Mother Nature. Mother Nature doesn't make too many accidents happen all the time. And it turned out that these mitochondria were wiggling out of cells and getting into other cells all the time. So that's probably not an accident. It's probably a really important pathway that we just didn't know about until very, very recently. But once it became clear that it like mitochondria, they're like, they don't stay in their lane. Okay. They don't know boundaries. And once that became an idea, and it's only been for the last 3 or 4 years that I could say it publicly and not have people laugh at me. So it's very new. It opened up the idea that instead of trying to do just like maybe one little chemical to treat a mitochondrial problem, maybe we could give a person like a totally revamped, renovated mitochondria, the whole organelle. And that is the field we're just at the beginning of it. We barely know what we're doing. I would say we mostly don't know what we're doing, and we have to be like really respectful about getting into a new area. But it's opened up this whole new world where we could potentially really seriously think about transplanting sort of the whole mitochondria into a person. And that was not even an option like just 5 years ago.
I can't even imagine how you would do such a thing. And I have no medical background. So Dr. Becker, I know that this is a very new topic, but how do you foresee it happening? I mean, there's cells, it's not like, you know, a lung transplant where it's in one place. Like it's, there's mitochondria in each of our cells. So is it like a, and I'm thinking more like in the route of a bone marrow transplant, but I have no clue, but I'm not well versed in the science of all of this. So what are you seeing in your head?
Like right now, I just think there's going to be a, I actually think there's going to be a lot of options for it. And there may
really?
Be different approaches for different
Whoa.
Diseases.
Huh.
And there might be just a, like a crazy thing, like, you know, it may turn out at some point, and there's really good evidence that macular degeneration, blindness, could be related to mitochondria. And there might be one form of mitochondrial transplantation that will do into somebody's eyeball. And I predict that that's going to be a different kind of mitochondrial mm-hmm. transplantation that will maybe do for somebody's brain or somebody's kidney or somebody who's wants to use it for aging. So I think that we're going to develop all kinds of techniques in mitochondrial transplantation. And it won't just be one, let's just say one size fits all.
That, okay.
That's like a little bit too simple for Mother Nature. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the thing to remember that I think is Mother Nature's doing it all the time. And so again, the first thing is to learn from Mother Nature. So like one approach is that Mother Nature lets mitochondria out into your bloodstream. Well, when the scientists first saw little remnants of mitochondria in the bloodstream, they just assumed, and many still assume, that they're just garbage. They're just like waiting to be digested and gotten rid of. It's just a mistake. They're in relatively small amounts. Well, I think that that's going to turn out to be wrong, part of it, at least. I think there will be some you just are getting rid of. But I think there's going to be many, many of those little particles that are picked up by other cells and they become active in those other cells. And so one way to give a mitochondrial transplantation could be to inject some healthy, well-designed mitochondria right into your bloodstream, and they would be picked up by cells as your blood circulates through your body and would go into different kinds of cells. Now, we are just, so that's like an experiment that we just did in our lab a few months ago. And we just kind of asked, well, where the heck do they go? Like that's, we're still at the point with this science that we're asking really, really basic, simple questions. Like where the heck does the mitochondria go if I inject it into the bloodstream?
Mm-hmm.
And we have some beginning answers on that. That it turns out they're taken up by different kinds of cells that are the cells that like to gobble things up. The white cells and some of your endothelial cells, they like to gobble up little proteins and little things that are circulating around. That's part of their function, and they do that. And it now appears they do that with mitochondria. So that's one of our things that we're researching very hot and heavy right now, which is where do these little mitochondria go? But there are other laboratories that are trying some other techniques, and we've begun to explore them, where, for example, if you wanted mitochondrial transplantation in the heart, maybe you could take a super tiny little needle and do multiple little injections into the muscle of the heart that would inject mitochondria into the heart muscle itself, And then maybe those cells would take up mitochondria. And there are several laboratories that have shown success with that.
Wow.
And the very first person that really did mitochondrial transplantation in humans was Jim McCulley. He's at Boston Children's Hospital. He's just one of my personal rock star heroes for like inspiration. He like did this like more than 10 years ago. And what he had was children whose hearts were failing because they had bad heart. They were born with congenital heart defects in the same way, Marcy, that some people are born with congenital mitochondrial defects.
Right.
These children had really bad hearts and they had to have surgery and some of them were dying because of it. And their hearts were so weak, they had to be on a cardiopulmonary machine. They had to be on a heart lung machine for these little teeny children to stay alive. And what Dr. McCulley did is he isolated mitochondria and he would inject those mitochondria using a teeny, teeny little needle into these hearts of these very small children. And he got some remarkable results with many of these children coming off the machine. And several of these children are now 8, 7 years old. They've been healthy since that time. And there are some videos on these and it worked.
And, wow. And they're living without those machines now.
That's right. They're living. Oh my gosh. Off. Their heart was restored to a better functional point. And then they grew a little bit and and remember their problem was not their mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Their problem was really in their heart muscle. Mm-hmm. And he kind of gave them an energy boost to their heart muscle. Their heart muscle worked better. And then they were able to come off a machine that they had been stuck on for a long time. And to be honest, for most of these children, they were worried that these children were not even going to survive. And so these children have, for the most part, done much better than anyone would have expected. And that was one of the first indications that we had that this mitochondrial transplantation was a real thing.
Wow. So this is really new. Do you have any idea? I mean, I'm 40 years old. Do you see this as a possibility for someone like me who has mitochondrial disease in my lifetime? Or are we talking more about an opportunity for, let's say, my children's generation?
Well, I think that comes down to whether or not we get a move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, so you've asked, you know, it's like the problem with predicting the future is it hasn't happened.
Right.
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 You know, and so what I would say is I think there's every opportunity that if we work together and come together and bring the field together, that this mm-hmm. field could go very rapidly. And by rapidly, I mean that we could have powerful, powerful technology that could help you and many other people within 5 to 10 years.
Now,
that would be really like, that's kind of true warp speed for medical science.
Okay.
On the other hand, you know, science is kind of pokes along at a certain speed.
Yeah.
Particularly the way we kind of do science traditionally is it's kind of done in small laboratories without a lot of people working together, not collaborating very well. And I think if we let it go that way, it's going to take a lot longer. So I think the answer to how long it's going to take is not so much about how long it has to take, because I think it could go fast or I think it could go slow. But I think it's, do people like get behind it and help it to go faster? It'll go faster.
Mm-hmm.
And if on the other hand, everybody's kind of off in their own laboratory and maybe
like
not
siloed
as connected,
off.
Siloed,
yeah.
And then mm-hmm. I think it's going to go slow. And so you tell me, like, I am here in part because I think there's so much opportunity in this. I think that if people came together, and by people, I mean the people who can make it go faster. So that includes patients,
mm-hmm.
that includes families, that includes scientists, that includes companies, that includes universities. And that includes industry and then regulatory people. And if all of those people would come together and say, hey, why don't we make this go a little faster? I think we could just double the pace of this.
So as a patient, I'm sure our listeners are thinking to themselves, okay, so like what can I do? When you say that patients can help move this along, what would you do if you were me?
So I think the first thing is that patients should get their voices together.
Okay.
Like to have to speak with a little bit of a unified kind of voice. And it should be a bunch of patients maybe that have all kinds of different things that are related that could be helped by mitochondrial transplantation. But let me tell you how big those number of patients are. And one of the groups that we work with is a company, and their name is Mitrix. You can look at them, Mitrix. And they're really interested in helping old people, because there's a lot of evidence that some of the parts of aging can be helped by a mitochondrial transplantation. Now, again, it's very early data, and I can't tell you anything about is it going to work? I don't know. I will tell you this, there's really exciting data coming out right now in animals that says it could help a little bit, okay? And by a little bit, I can't say, is it do you get 10 years or something like that? But it looks like maybe something like that. So there's great data that's appearing. Now, normally, when you and I are talking about patients, we're probably not all talking about this. Like the kind of patient you have is maybe different than the kind of patient I'm thinking about. But I think what would really help is for all patients to come together to say, look, this is a foundational breakthrough in medicine. It's about energy. It's about our ability to regenerate. Regeneration is not only important for people who have mitochondrial disease, it's important for aging. And if we can link those patients together, their voice could be really, really powerful. And so the first thing that I would say is, if I was a patient, I would be saying, can we organize some kind of patient voice that can go to different people and say, hey, let's get a move on, okay? Let's put this on the warp speed, not on slow speed, right? Let's play leapfrog. Let's move ahead with this technology, okay? And I think all of that's possible. And so where those voices need to go is in at least two different directions. One, that voice needs to go to our people who help us spend money on behalf of all of us, right? So that means, hey, call up your senator and your congressman and the people who give out money, and we got to give money to this research. And this should be, in my opinion, a much more heavily funded area than it is right now. The funding on this has been tiny, tiny, tiny funding. And what it needs is a decent, good shovel full of funding so that it can really start to pick up. And that's something that organizations like the NIH need to be spoken with. And the NIH, guess who the NIH listens to? Patients, families, the public, Congress people, senators, governors, all of those people, that's who the NIH listens to. So that's how important the voice of all of those people is, because there's no question that right now, the funding in this area has been, I'm just going to be really polite so that I don't make anybody too angry. I'm going to say the funding has been small, okay? I could use some other descriptors, okay? That quite honestly, most of the people, as you know, we just had a conference on this, and most people are literally funding these studies on fumes. They're funding them out of no money at all. And we're never going to get the field to move forward if we don't make a commitment to learn, like, what we could learn about this. And we're right at the beginning of it. And so, you know, that the most important time to put a investment in research is at the very beginning of a new field. And that's where we are with this. So just so you know, like, I'm not mad at anybody who hasn't funded this. I'm not upset with them. This is our moment to tell them, hey, there's this really new, exciting area that you could put some money into, and we could get a big bang for our buck on this. Like, we could fix a bunch of diseases potentially with this. And wouldn't that just be wonderful to see an acceleration of science? And that's really why we did our conference that just took place last week. It wasn't just so that we could have a bunch of, you know, kind of pointy-headed scientists like me talking to each other and telling some story about what we did in the laboratory. Like, that's not why we meet. It's because we think there's this amazing opportunity to accelerate worldwide science in this area. And it's because we're at the beginning of this, and it's because it looks like such a big area.
Well, I've written down a lot of notes, and I'm hoping that Mito Action can, you know, bring all of our people together. And I hope that there's a lot we can do on our end from the patient side of it. We can come together. There's no reason we can't. And this is so important. And I've been doing this podcast for over 2 years now. And this is definitely one of the episodes that makes me feel like really at peace with how science is moving. And not that it's moving quickly, and we're talking about, you know, that there's a need for funding and we need to all come together and there's a lot of work to be done and this is in its infancy, but at least there is an idea, and that is more than I knew about 30, 60 days before now. I learned about you. I learned about your conference. And unfortunately, I was not able to go, but I've heard really great things about it. And I know that there was a lot of excitement that came out of it. And I really hope that we can work on that warp speed path. That would be really nice. And I'm going to do everything I can. And hopefully, you know, we can stay up to date with you. Would you mind, Dr. Becker, if I reach out to you from time to time to see if there's more updates on your research and a reason for you to come back and give us an update on the podcast?
I'm happy to. So one of the things is, and I want to sort of appreciate you for putting the word out a little bit, Marcy, and for getting this out. It's so important. You know, just, I hate to say it, I'm a scientist. Scientists are not really trained sometimes to, like, get the message out very well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they've just mostly done a miserable job at it, okay? And again, I'm being polite here, okay? I think that a lot of times we need to push scientists to get the word out on why the research they're doing is so important to mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And just think about it. Right now, we're at a time in America where the funding for research is really kind of up in the air right now.
Very up in the air, yes.
And young people are having to make decisions about their career.
Mm-hmm.
They have to say, do I want to do a career where I become a scientist and maybe get to do some really cool things? Or should I go off and be something different? It's just, you know, in a different area. And I think we're turning off a lot of young people going into science right now because they're hearing this horrible situation where research scientists in cancer and in aging and in very important diseases are losing their funding, and that the research itself is just kind of, it's so risky. Why would you want to spend your life and, you know, and have to support a family based on a career if you're not sure that there's going to be careers there?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have a lot to do in this country, but there's no country that is better suited to be able to punch way above our weight than the United States. And our science infrastructure is the envy of the world. At least it has been up until very, very recently. We can do better. We can go faster. But it's really important for people to understand that right now, that science is under attack. Mm-hmm. And if we don't take care of it, and if we don't view it like a garden and you have to fertilize it a little bit, you got to water it a little bit, got to do a little weeding, but you got to plant some new trees, you got to plant some new crops, you got to, you know, it's the springtime here, you know, it's time to put the lettuce in, it's time to put the seeds out, right? Like that takes, like we got to do that for science, because mm-hmm. that's how science grows. And we got to attend to that as a country right now. And right now, everyone in the United States who's involved in science is worried about what the heck is happening to American science right now. And so we got to stay attuned to that. And to be honest, because America has led the world, there are people all around the world that are worried about American science because they see it going in the wrong direction.
And they know that'll impact them as well.
They know that they depend on it.
Yeah.
And so it's like we've got a lot of work to do, and we're at a critical time. And just what frustrates me, and I'm just being really honest about it, is that it's terrible to see us moving in the wrong direction when I think there's so much opportunity to save people's lives and to help people who have things like mitochondrial disease and cardiac arrest and aging and maybe blindness and maybe a bunch of other diseases. I think we're on the verge of some incredible breakthroughs. And so it is frustrating as heck for me to feel like this is the moment where things are going in the wrong direction.
So the momentum has been building and building, and it's up in the air as to whether we can continue that momentum or not. Yeah, that's a very scary idea. I hope that we can find funding at least for this and see this moving in the right direction. I am so glad that you are you and that you are out there working on this. And I hope that there are others that are going to join you and that have joined you in your efforts. Dr. Becker, thank you for coming on and talking about this. Thank you for, you know, on behalf of our entire mitochondrial disease community for doing this research. And thank you for allowing your career in emergency medicine to go in this direction, because I believe in you, and I have a feeling that you're going to make a big impact on our community. So thank you for being here, and I'm going to be knocking on your door periodically so that we can get updates on this, because I know our listeners are going to be really into it.
Be sure to let your listeners know they can contact me. I'm easy to get a hold of.
Okay.
And give them all the information, and we love hearing from people, and some of them may have some of the best ideas and things that we haven't thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, part of the reason that I have so much fun in my career is I just love listening to people who think a little bit differently than me and see the world a little bit differently. I find that is so refreshing. That's why we try to encourage the careers of young people who, you know, have their own ideas about the world, and they want the world to move in wonderful ways. And so please let your listeners know they can reach out, and if we work together, we can really accelerate the discoveries in this. We can accelerate our ability to translate it into human use. And I think we're going to really help some people. I think it'll save some people's lives. I think it could extend a life on some people. And I think it could really raise us to kind of some new opportunities for modern medicine that just haven't opened up as we open up this world of energetics.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. We need you, Dr. Becker, and we appreciate you. And thanks for sharing all of this on our podcast.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.